Welcome to the Should Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Ryan Glassbeagle of Front Office Sports will join us. We will go over a variety of different topics, tanking in the NBA, how to fix it, state of the NBA, Giannis, Cauchy, prediction markets, Vegas pricing, a little bit of a different show just because, you know, slow time of the year, not a ton going on in terms of this weekend. This is about, you know, people always say August or July is the slowest month of the year. July, August, you get baseball. August, football is starting, about to start. You get preseason football. To me, it's this weekend, and then, like I said, a couple weeks before you know it, we're into March Madness. But excited to talk to Ryan. Ryan has interesting opinions on a lot of different topics, so should be a fun conversation. I will start, do a couple things here. I'll get to some baseball, and there have been a lot of baseball injuries the past couple days. It felt like a 24-hour stretch where every time you looked at your phone, it was Holiday for the Orioles, the former number one pick, who I think is going to be a really good player. Lindor. These guys with hammock bone injuries, there's one other one I'm missing, but a lot of guys with these hammock bone injuries, some pitchers getting banged up. Verlander did sign with the Tigers, but a lot of injuries recently in baseball. But I do have some bets in baseball that I've talked about briefly on here, but I'll just reiterate here in a minute. But I'll start NBA. It is All-Star Weekend. I talked about this on Tuesday. I could kind of see the writing on the wall coming that this was going to be a big story. And I think it's gotten bigger, and I think it'll only get bigger this weekend with no football. It's All-Star Weekend. It used to be, for people of a certain age, NBA All-Star Weekend used to be actually something you looked forward to. Dunk contest. The All-Star game used to be really good. It used to be fun. It used to be like an event. Now it's just a total waste of time. But this is the week where, without football, NBA's on center stage. And you know, the tanking is just so egregious that it's going to become a hot button issue. It already has been. Bill Simmons, I know, did a lot on his podcast with it, ideas on how to fix it. And again, I'll talk to Ryan here in a minute to get his thoughts. I think something has to be done. I actually think this time next year or in 2 years, are we going to be talking about the same thing? Is this just a cyclical thing where we talk about it every year and nothing gets fixed? I actually think this will be the year that it gets fixed because it's so egregious. And the league is just not in great shape in terms of the regular season. But from a betting standpoint, and this is a betting show, yeah, I've heard people make the case, oh, this is great from a betting standpoint. We know these teams are tanking. We can exploit it. Not really. I mean, how? I'm open to ideas. I guess, you know, if you're watching the Utah game and you get the sense that they're not going to play their guys in their fourth quarter, and Jaren Jackson Jr., he's not going to be playing at all this year. With the knee injury, he's got surgery, so who knows how legit that is. I wouldn't think they're giving him surgery if he didn't need it, but of course the timing of it leaves people suspect. But unless you're watching those games, you think, all right, these guys are going to come out of the game and stay out of the game. I'm going to take all their unders on props, under points, under rebounds for marketing, all these other guys that might sit, and I'm going to parlay, and I'm going to play it that way, I guess. But sometimes these guys sit to start the fourth quarter anyway. Sometimes they come back in. Is that really an angle? I'm not sure. All right, you know Utah's tanking. All right, you know the Nets are tanking. First off, there's enough of these tanking teams where they're playing each other, so do with that information, you know, what you will. Pacers and Nets played on Wednesday night. That line went from like 2 to 6.5 with the Nets going from -2 to -6.5. And the Nets led by double digits at halftime, led by double digits in the second half, and the Pacers won the game. So it's not that easy. And like I said, you know the Jazz are tanking. I'm recording this before the game's on Thursday night. Okay, the Blazers are playing the Jazz in Utah. Do you want to lay 9 on the road with the Blazers? Like, everyone knows they're tanking. So I don't know that there's some advantage from a betting standpoint unless these teams are going to pull the plug in the middle of the game and look like they're playing and then bench players. But that's not as easy as you think. I mean, the algorithm, I guess, would not account for that, and that it would be one angle. But that's not really the norm. Like, on Wednesday night, the Pacers just didn't play Siakam, McConnell, Nesmith, Nemhard. They just didn't play their four best guys. They sat the whole game, and they still won the game. And we see this in Week 18 of the NFL, the one time where the NFL, you know, rests guys and you don't see the starters. Sometimes the backups get killed and they lose by 40. Sometimes the backups win the game outright and pull an upset. And it's the same thing in the NBA where, again, recording this before Blazers-Utah, but I think that's a perfect example. Yeah, maybe the Blazers go out and they win this game by 40 points in Utah. It's certainly possible. We saw it with the Spurs-Lakers the other night. Lakers rest everybody. Spurs just demolish them. They can name their score. It's like the varsity versus, you know, a junior high team. Or sometimes the team that's resting everyone, the backups are trying to play. I mean, that's the one caveat you got to point out, too. The one caveat is the backups are trying. So these teams are trying to lose with the front office, with suboptimal lineups, but the guys on the court are actually trying. And sometimes the team that's favored, knows the other team, all right, they're resting their guys. I'm just going to, you know, we can relax. This will be an easy win. And then they're playing guys that are playing really hard and you get upset. So I don't know from a betting standpoint that it's as easy as people are making it seem that, all right, this is tanking. This is going to be so easy in terms of making money. One angle you could look at, Tom Haberstroh pointed this out, and he posted the chart of team games left versus tanking teams. So like the Cavs have a bunch of games against tanking teams. I've heard, I think it was JVT made the point, like 9-1 to win the division, because they got, I think, 15 games against teams that are tanking. But if you look, they're 8 games behind the Pistons. That's 8 in the loss column, I should say. That's a lot of losses to make up. That really is. At this time of the year, we're not, you know, we're not in October, November. That's really asking a lot to make up that much of a deficit in this short a period of time. So we'll see what comes of it. I'm sure this will be a hot button issue all weekend. It's already started to be with the NBA tanking. And 3 games in progress on Thursday night, and then the NBA goes dark for a little while. Think about the NBA. It goes dark until the All-Star break. Then when you get back, it's a couple weeks until the conference tournament starts. Then when the conference tournament starts, you kind of forget about the NBA until, you know, you go through the entire NCAA tournament, and that takes you basically till the start of the NBA playoffs. And as bad as the regular season is, I talked about this on past shows, their playoffs are still really good. It's become a postseason-only sport for a lot of people, but that still is a good postseason, and it should be another good one this year with, you know, OKC, a worthy title defender, Spurs, Nuggets. Those are all elite teams. Rockets are a viable contender. Lakers probably can't win it all. Don't have enough defense, but they do have Luka and LeBron. And then the East is pretty wide open. You know, Harden on the Cavs is giving them a lift. So we'll do the NBA here and there, and especially more in the playoffs. But just quickly on baseball, I like Baltimore. They signed Bassett. I talked about them a little bit. We did an episode of baseball a couple weeks ago with Jensen Lewis. I just don't trust, and they're 5-1 to win the division, 84.5 win total. 2 years ago, the Yankee team that had Soto, a really good Yankee team, the one that finally went to the World Series, that team was wire to wire with Baltimore, neck and neck with Baltimore the entire season. And the Yankees pulled away eventually. And the next year, the Orioles, you know, some of the position players regressed. The pitching all got hurt. That pitching's going to be healthier this year. Bradish is really good. Rogers gave them some really great innings for part of the year last year. Make some additions to the rotation here. I think the Orioles, with their lineup, and look, success is not always linear. Sometimes these guys take a step back when you don't expect it. Well, all right, year three, they're going to pop. Sometimes year three, they take a step back, and year four, they pop. You know, things like that. I could see Baltimore being really good. I think that's a very competitive division. You wouldn't be shocked if Boston won it with all the young talent. Crochet, Cora is an outstanding manager. Yankees are still the Yankees, even though they're not really the Yankees anymore. You have Judge, you have good pitching. That was a good offense last year. I actually think, in a weird way, even though I'm as down on the Yankees as everyone, as Yankee fans are, a little too much is made of that 4-game series loss to Toronto in the wild card round. It's a 4-game series. It's a best of 5 in baseball. It's hard to draw anything from. I know Toronto beat them like a drum all regular season, then beat them in the playoffs. Yankees will still have a good team. And then Toronto went to the World Series, was a, you know, play away from winning the World Series. So it's a good division. It's a talented division, but can Toronto duplicate that? I don't really trust the Yankees as much. I still think they're good, and they have a pretty high floor. And then the Red Sox are good, but I don't think they're unbeatable. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Baltimore at 5-1. I think there is value there to win the division. You can get that at DraftKings. But let's talk to Ryan Glassbiegel. Let's talk some NBA, some tanking, some Kalshi, a lot of different things. Excited to talk to Ryan. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. He is the most underrated man in all of media. He does a great job at Front Office Sports, and he joins us once again, Ryan Glassbiegel. Ryan, what's going on, man? Thanks for doing this.
Oh, good to be here, Will. It's been too long since the last time.
Bad job by me. Bad job by me. I got to ask you more often. We got a lot to do. I did my podcast Tuesday, and I could kind of see the iceberg in the distance where NFL is over, NBA All-Star Weekend, NBA's on center stage, and the tanking is becoming egregious, that this was going to become, if not a firestorm, certainly a hot-button issue, especially with nothing else to talk about. I think we're at that point. I think this weekend it'll even intensify. Before we get to your ideas on where it went wrong, how to fix it, you know, you have very good betting instincts, I would say. Is there any way to exploit this from a betting standpoint? Because I don't see one. I think, you know what, people say, well, they're trying to lose. It's easy to make money off it. Well, The books know they're trying to lose. The market knows it. If you want to lay 9 with the Blazers in Utah, go have a good time. We see this all the time, week 18 in the NFL, where the backups play, and sometimes the backups lose by 40. Sometimes they win outright. So before we get to how to fix it, is there a betting angle in any way from you with all the tanking stuff?
There's like this prevailing sentiment in the industry, never listen to touts. If they were so good, they would just bet their own money and keep it a secret. But there's so many people out there now that share their picks, and if you can like find ones who have, you know, documented a record and just go month by month, even into the years of like what they've done, you can find some people and just like tail them instead of doing your own research for like the NBA especially. It's harder in the NFL. In the NFL, it's not harder, but like I just trust my own instincts better in the NFL because I literally watch it every minute that there's an NFL window on during the season. I'm at least watching it on my phone, if not like on TV. And so I have like a sense for, you know, players who might be kind of like emerging in offenses or whatever. But for NBA, there's this like guy, Mike Barner. He's on the like Sportsline app and he puts up a couple NBA player props every day. And so he's like a master at, this guy is out, so that guy is going to like go over his points and assists total. And over the last like probably 2 months, he's hitting at around like a 70% clip. So like it requires a lot of discipline even to just tail these guys because you are looking at their pick, and then you have to have 9 betting accounts and find where the best line is. They can vary by 15 or 20% on a single line between one book and another. And so, you know, you got to get them in quickly because some of these guys move lines, but that's really what my big strategy is on the NBA.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, Utah, they're doing this thing where they rest the guys in the fourth quarter. If you're onto that, maybe you can, like, same-game parlay some of the unders if you think they're going to sit and you can get a nice score that way. But from, you know, from a betting standpoint, I think it's not as easy as some people make it seem with trying to take advantage of the tanking. Let's get to the tanking, though, from just a fan perspective. Let's just say Adam Silver hired you for, I don't know, a day, a week, and said, hey, man, my league is a mess. Everyone's tanking. I need help. How do I put the toothpaste back in the tube? How do I fix this? What are your ideas?
I would make it so that everybody who doesn't make the conference finals gets an equal weight in the draft lottery. Then there's just your only incentive is to win. No one's going to like tank a shot at the Final Four, right? Like, so, you know, you get there, all of a sudden the championship is within grasp. I'd give those 4 teams the last 4 picks of the first round, have everybody else in a lottery. And, like, this idea, like, oh, well, I don't think, like, you need to reward the biggest losers. I know the NFL does this, and the NFL is just, like, such a great system and everyone wants to emulate it. There is like a little tanking when you get into like the last week or two, but the thing in the NFL that like really fortifies against tanking for the most part is these players, like, if when you're in an NFL game, you get physically mauled if you don't put your effort in. If you like take a playoff as like an offensive lineman or something, you could break your neck. And so the like fear of like physical dismemberment stops these players from, you know, tanking their efforts. And there's no such fear of that in the NBA. I don't like, you know, let's say the Knicks lose in the second round here, and then all of a sudden they're in a position to add DeBonza or Cameron Boozer. And like all of a sudden it's like really exciting, and like the lottery would just be a really marquee event if you give everybody an equal weight and 26 teams are in it.
Do you get the sense that this thing with Utah and just, I don't know, everyone's sort of outrage, and it's not even outrage, it's just people frustrated with the regular season, frustrated with the tanking. Do you think this year causes a change? Or are we going to be having the same conversation a year from now, 2 years from now?
How long have we been having it? We've been having it for like 20 years, right?
I don't know that it's this early, though, and this blatant and this many teams.
Yeah, I mean, but it doesn't seem like, for how like shamefully anti-competitive what these teams are doing, it doesn't seem like there's like a big enough incremental reward in this lottery to justify what they're doing, and they're still doing it. This draft is just like, I'm not going to say once in a lifetime, but it's probably the most insane draft since 2003, right? So, you know, once every generation, not once in a lifetime, but like, you know, when there were, for people who don't just like think about this stuff all day, that was like LeBron and Carmelo and Dwayne Wade. It seems like this maybe doesn't surpass that draft, but it rivals it. And so there are like, you know, it's not just that you need like the number one pick, like, you know, when Wemby was the first overall pick or Cooper Flagg was the first overall pick. And it's like, if you get the first pick, you're really set for 10 years and barring some insane health occurrence. There's like three or four players like that right now. So that's why there's like all this jockeying early, right?
I think that, and I think just some of the language in these trades where it's top X protected, top four protected, where it just happens that, you know what, I got to get in this, inside this landmark, this barrier, where I got to keep my pick. That's, I think, part of it too.
Yeah, I mean, how would you fix it? I like my idea of the unweighted lottery where, you know, any, like a play, just like imagine like a playoff team, you know, they're one guy away and then they're adding DeBonzia. I think that would like add a ton of intrigue, and it would also disincentivize these teams that are just like built to be terrible, like the process era Sixers started.
I was thinking just give the same odds for everybody, whether you win the championship or you go 0-82, you got a 1-30 chance. But your idea is, I think, even better. So I like that, where, all right, you exclude the final four teams. Nobody, like you said, is going to tank a chance to get to the final four. Then everyone else has an equal shot. I do think something has to be done. I actually do think something kind of will be done, just because, man, this is and you talk about this a lot. You do a great job. You and Ethan go on House of Strauss. Just the health of the league.
Right after this.
Oh, good. I will be looking forward to listening to that, and I would encourage everyone else to listen to it too. Just the health of the league is just in not good shape. And Bill Simmons, who's very, you know, pro-NBA, he's not somebody to mince his words, I guess, but him going after Adam Silver the way he did, I don't know. What would you say your, like, state of the league, NBA right now, is what in terms of health?
I mean, here's the thing. It's better this year than it was last year because NBC has come in and they have such crisp production. They're treating Sunday night like a marquee event and really, like, you know, trying to raise the stakes of these games. They're not going to get helped every week, but so in a way, it's like the worst might be over, at least from like the national games. But, you know, it does seem like it's open season. All of a sudden, like, the things that Ethan and I have been talking about for 5+ years, other people are, like, quote, allowed to say them. You know, it's Simmons, and then you've got, there, like, you see it on ESPN. ESPN treated the NBA like a sacred cow for a long time. But, you know, we've got Tim Legler, who is going to be an analyst on the NBA Finals. It's an excellent job. Everyone respects his opinion. He's sounding the alarm about all of the tanking. You've got, like, Dan Wetzel writing a column about how the public, like, confidence in the league is at a lull. So you're seeing, like, you know, people and platforms really going after the, like, flaws in the sport that I think have been there for a while. This stuff isn't new. And so it feels like we're teetering where, you know, Adam Silver got this big new TV deal. He's like Hyman Roth. He makes money for his partners. But then, like, now what? Like, he... how could like Amazon and NBC not have buyer's remorse right now with just how little effort the players and the teams put into this in a night to night basis? So there could be like, I think Adam Silver could be on the clock right now.
Giannis, you're a Bucks fan. You're very savvy when it comes to the media. That was a fascinating case study in that something got leaked to someone. I don't think Shams and all these other guys are just making stuff up, making up rumors. But then Giannis won't really come on the record and say, hey, I want to stay or I want to go. There's a lot of, you know, vague sort of mixed messages. And then he comes out with the message that, you know, legends don't chase, they attract, all of that. What was your take on that? What do you think ultimately happened?
I think that the Bucks are willing to move him, but they decided that their best move is to wait. You know, I'm not like as into the NBA, like, and all knowing like all the cap and trade stuff as a lot of other people are. But like my understanding, like there's some, like, you know, you can only trade X number of years into the future. And so there are like more teams that can have compelling picks packages that come into the trading marketplace this off season, as opposed to doing it right now. Plus like the fact that his value is like a little depressed because he's had that calf injury a couple of times. So maybe they couldn't fetch as big of a bounty right now as they could in the off season. Cause it's not like, you know, there's like a team out there. Look, the Knicks would love to have Giannis. If you add him, you know, if you put him on their team, take off Carl Anthony Towns or whatever, all of a sudden, like the Knicks might be the clear favorites in the East. But I just don't think like there was a compelling enough offer that it didn't make sense for the Bucks to wait. Now, I think that what it is that I don't think that like Giannis is necessarily pushing to go. I think the Bucks are ready to blow it up. And that's why all of those leaks came out, because all of a sudden they were like listening to offers in a way that they hadn't ever been willing to before. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I said the same thing before the deadline. I said, you know, I don't see a deal that makes sense. I mean, the Knicks package that was being floated, Towns doesn't make sense for a rebuild. You want to, you know, you don't have your picks, so you can't just tank. The Warriors package, okay, those picks are down the future, but those NBA draft picks 5 years down the road, if you're a GM, you're probably not going to be around to enjoy those, even though those are nice scratch-off tickets. That's not enough for me as like a centerpiece for a Giannis deal. I need like a guy who's likely to make an all-star or some like elite picks. I need something I can sink my teeth into, not just a bunch of lottery tickets.
Right, and then you look at it from like the other team's perspective. It's just harder to make these trades work right now because you have to match the salary. And then Giannis is going to be making like $70 million per year. So you have to like account for like that cash flow coming out. And you have to like say we only get like one other good player because of the apron rules. So you've got to like have another superstar there already, and then it's going to be like kind of a bare cupboard around those two. It's a very difficult thing to move one of these like super duper stars right now with all of the different factors at play. As you said, you got to get something back, and then the team has to like has to be willing and able to make it work. So it's a very complicated structure.
Do you have a problem with him doing a deal with Kalshi Giannis?
You know, they could have waited like 7 minutes longer to announce it. Like, you know, it's like a vibrant market. Will he or won't he be traded for months on that platform? And then the next day, literally the day after the trade deadline, it's like, I'm an equity partner. And you know, we could talk about like prediction markets versus sports books until we're blue in the teeth. I think we could probably do 3 hours, just you and me talking about those on our own. Right now, they're allowed. The CFTC has said they're allowed. And so we'll see like what happens. You know, I have like a very good, sharp sports book business source who just is of the total like unrelenting belief that this is eventually going to wind up in the Supreme Court, and that the Supreme Court is going to say that sports betting on prediction markets is illegal. And so then we're going to have to see, you know, Kalshi and Polymarket basically acquire or merge with like traditional sports books. But, you know, that's years down the line, probably. What I would tell anybody about the prediction markets is there's not consumer protection for you that you're not going to be on like the wrong end of an insider trade. Like Tarek, I'm not going to try to say his last name, but the founder of Kalshi did this like disastrous interview on CNBC this week. And they were like talking, you know, it was funny because there was like clear insider trading on Polymarket for the Bad Bunny halftime show, and like what song he would do first and would these people perform or not perform. And like there was like some account that just magically nailed everything the day before. So if I were him, I would have been like, well, there are other places where you saw clear insider trading here. He didn't do that. He's like, well, we don't allow it. It's like, okay, well, you say it's not allowed, but it's not illegal. It's like, you know, the SEC governs this with stock and options and futures trading, but there isn't like some federal law preventing this happening. So if you're going to like trade on like what song Bad Bunny's going to do first and you don't have insider info, you're kind of just like playing a slot machine.
Yeah, other takeaways you had from that interview were what, and what do you think ultimately happens here?
I thought it was like hilarious when he started to suggest that like the trees in the Bad Bunny performance should be like bound by the same type of like insider trading regulation that like, I don't know, the CEO of Walmart would have. You know, it's like kind of difficult to understand him because he like talks really fast and slickly, but he really seemed to be implying that like the trees like should be like put in jail if like they tell a friend who tells a friend what the first song is. And like the CNBC host is just like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Like you guys made this. Like you don't just get to like introduce this whole like betting platform and make like millions of people have to keep their mouths shut or else. That's just the way the world works.
It was entertaining. I will retweet it for anyone that hasn't seen it. It is you know, I think you tweeted me, we were DMing you, like it starts slow but the end is just absolutely worth
electric.
It
like he was somewhat unprepared for like this line of questioning, and it's like I don't know how you'd be unprepared for that. This is what everybody's talking about. Like how do you not have a, well, our platform is going to, you know, take extra measures to make sure that our consumers aren't getting cheated, and we welcome regulation in this. Just say that. It's so easy.
Ratings for the Super Bowl, ratings for the halftime show, how do they go? I know the handle in Vegas was way down, and some of that is prediction markets. Some of that is, hey, if you've been to Vegas recently, you know it is not cheap. You and I have kids and young kids, and, man, it's tough.
To go to Vegas. I want to talk about that after this because maybe someone will hear it and care. But, you know, the ratings were low, and there's a lot of factors for that. So it was like a 2% drop from last year. People don't like care about Nielsen that much, but they changed the like methodology, which basically like I would say it pushes numbers up like 7 to 10% versus how they counted it before. So being down 2% is really like being down 10% versus last year. And even like over the last several years, they pushed the counting up versus how it was pre-2020. So now you're looking at 10, 15, 20% declines based on how they used to measure it before. There weren't any, like, you know, superstars in this game. Drake May might become one. Maybe if, like, the Seahawks go on a run, then all of a sudden, like, Sam Darnold and some of these, like, absurdly fast defensive players on the Seahawks will be household names. But, you know, they're not a Patrick Mahomes, a Josh Allen, certainly not Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers-type figures, at least not yet in their lives. So you don't have, like, those storylines to build off of. You were also, you know, you don't have a team in their like dynasty accumulation phase either. Like, you know, Portnoy tried to say that this is a continuation of the Pats dynasty. It's not. And so it's not like they're trying to add a seventh to their dynastic run. They're trying to add a first. The Seahawks are trying to add a first. You like to have an entity like, you know, if it was the Rams, they're trying to add their second Super Bowl. And then all of a sudden it really changes how history is going to look at Matt Stafford and Sean McVay, because there's a rare club to get your second. And they don't have that to build off of. And then you've got Bad Bunny, which, as I wrote about, literally 10 million people just turned the game off when he came on. And you could say, well, they should be more tolerant. Everyone should want, you know, anti-ICE, like, Spanish speaker that you don't understand. And you should be willing to embrace other cultures. 10 million people weren't. And so they changed the channel. And that's a big drop. I think, like, it's either the most or second most that's ever happened at halftime. Like, The Weeknd, a lot of people turned that one off in 2021. But that was, like, a wonky time in the world where it's during COVID. Almost nothing from 2020 to 2021 counts in my personal record book. So, a lot of people turn that off. And you add it all up, and, you know, 2% decline doesn't look disastrous, but when you're given the new Nielsen metrics, I think, like, Sports Media Watch wrote that it was only the third time since 1990 that it got under a 40 share, which is like the percentage of households in America tuning in. And I think that's more of an apples to apples number than like the raw viewership. So I know I just rambled a lot, but hopefully, like I said, something interesting.
No, that was a good answer. And that was a lot of the stuff I was saying before the game, that there just wasn't a lot of buzz, a lot of juice. I think you were at Super Bowl week in Radio Row. Yeah. So maybe that, you know, I don't know if you got the same feel. It's different. I talked to people there where it's like, yeah, I can't really relate because I'm here. But I mean, you and I are of an age, and people a little younger than us, they don't remember a Super Bowl where there's not either Brady, Mahomes, Peyton Manning, and pretty much those three guys covered the last, you know, 15 plus Super Bowls. All right, the other one had Rodgers, the other one had Roethlisberger, but you get the idea. And I thought that was just lacking a little buzz. Neither team made the playoffs last year. It just felt like a down year in general for the NFL. I think that was...
It wasn't a down year for the rest of the season, just for the Super Bowl.
You know, I just mean Josh the teams. Allen, I just mean, like, Mahomes got hurt. Like, the Lions were good but didn't make the play. I felt like there wasn't a great team. Like, Seattle was really good, but I just felt like the level of play, I don't know if you watch it as much as I do. I know you do. Oh, so
believe me, the blocking is not what it used to be.
Yeah. I just thought it was more of a wide-open year where it didn't feel like, I don't know, it just felt like an off year, kind of a down year in the NFL.
It's going to be like that now, Will, because the season's longer, so it's more of a war of attrition. They are mixing these international games, which, like, you know, it messes your team up for 3 weeks when you have one of them. They're going to go further and further away. Like, if you think it messes your team up when they go to London, wait till they're going to Australia. Like, the fields on these international games are not NFL fields. And, you know, like, last year, the whole Packers season got derailed because, like, Jordan Love got hurt in Brazil. Like, it was, you know, that's just what that's the new normal, that we're going to have these wide open fields, I think.
Can you believe, can you still believe, I still can't, that the Packers blew that playoff game? I just...
What do you mean? Of course I can believe it. I bet the Bears at plus 500 money line. I saw that coming. They blow games like that. That's like what this regime does. They've blown so many games stupidly. They did it, like, all year. They blew – it was, like, the second time in 3 weeks they did that with the Bears. And they did that with the Browns. They almost did it with the Cardinals. Like, they can beat or lose to anybody. So it didn't surprise me whatsoever.
And after everything that happened, they still had the ball with the lead a few minutes left, and you got a couple first downs. You get a couple first downs in that spot. Usually that's the end of the game, but, like, they went out of bounds. And then after that, they had a drop after they gave up the touchdown. I was on Green Bay pretty big there. I was still just – that was one, and usually
these
roll off
of me. They were for sure better. And, yeah. But, like, they should have been – If the Bears didn't, like, this is like the biggest market inefficiency in anywhere in pro sports, where if you don't have morals, you can send like a defensive lineman headfirst into an opposing star quarterback and knock him out, not just that week, but the week after. And that's what the Bears did to the Packers in week like 15 or 16, week 16, like just drilled Jordan Love in the crown of the helmet. And like, if they don't do that, the Packers, I think, are the 2 seed. It's a big difference playing the Bears at Lambeau versus Soldier. I think that they probably still lose in Seattle, but I think they get there.
All right, we'll wrap on this. You wanted to talk about it. Vegas, the pricing. When's the last time you've been there? You take the floor, take it whatever direction you want to go.
I went in April for WrestleMania. Like, they really make you not want to come back. Now, here's the thing. I've, like, in somehow, some way, won in blackjack my last 2 trips in Vegas, and that just changes everything, because like you're going like expecting to lose a grand or two or whatever, and the last two trips I won a grand or two each time, and so it just like when the trip becomes almost free, it's like a massive difference, and I'm jinxing it by saying this out loud, but you know, it is like $10 for a slice of pizza, $20 for a domestic beer if you're not gambling. The gambling is like not a square gamble on the strip. It's like 6 to 5 unless you're playing $100 a hand. The rooms aren't nice. Like, there's a long line to check in. You know, like they charge you $50 to check in early. They charge you $50 to check in late. Like, the city isn't buzzing after midnight anymore. Like, it's not like it's shut down, but, like, even, like, you know, Saturday night, Park MGM, 1 in the morning, you don't feel like you're in a buzzy atmosphere. And that's different than what it was a decade ago. It went all night, especially on the weekends. You know, Thursday night at 10 o'clock, the city is just, like, a ghost town now. And it's wild. They just have flagrant disrespect for the common man in Las Vegas right now.
Hard to disagree with any of that. I'll let you go. You know, I know you got to know.
Like, yeah, they're like, oh, the Super Bowl handle was down big. Well, maybe if you didn't charge $500 to sit and watch the game at Caesar's Palace, more people might come. Nickel and diming does not begin to describe what they do. They're Jackson and Benjamin-ing you at every step.
I think it was 900 at Caesars, and somebody, I forget who on one of my group chats, goes, they should do an interview with somebody who pays that price. I want to hear from that person who actually
like
pays the 900
bucks. Stars members, like Crack from VC, yeah, was like saying, like, you could have the highest status at Caesars, and they still just rail you.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan, this was awesome, man. I appreciate it. We got to do this more often. I appreciate the time. Let everyone know where they can find you, and I'll let you go.
Sports Rapport, RAPPORT on Twitter. And please read my stories at Front Office Sports.
Good job by you.
Thank you.
Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Ryan Glassbeagle. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.